Chapter 6 Gateways. Rand woke in total darkness and lay there beneath his blankets trying to think of what had wakened him. It had been something. Not the dream. He had been teaching Avienda how to swim, in a pond in the Waterwood, back home in the Two Rivers. Something else. Then it came again, like a faint whiff of a foul miasma creeping under the floor. Not a smell at all, really. A sense of otherness. But that was how it felt. Rank, like something dead a week in stagnant water. It faded again, but not all the way this time. Tossing aside his blankets, he stood up, wrapping himself in Sidene. Inside the void, filled with the power, he could feel his body shiver, but the cold seemed in another place from where he was. Cautiously, he pulled open the door and stepped out. Arched windows at either end of the corridor let in falls of moonlight. After the pitch black of his room, it was nearly like day. Nothing moved, but he could feel something coming closer, something evil. It felt like the taint that roared through him on the power. One hand went to his coat pocket to the small carved figure of a round little man holding a sword across his knees. An Angrial. With that, he could channel more of the power than even he could safely handle unaided. He thought it would not be necessary. Whoever had sent this attack against him did not know who they were dealing with now. They should never have let him wake. For a moment, he hesitated. He could take the fight to whatever had been sent against him, but he thought it was still below him, down where the maidens were still sleeping by the silence. With luck, it would not bother them, unless he rushed down to battle it in their midst. That would surely wake them, and they would not stand by and watch. Lan said that you should choose your ground if you could and make your enemy come to you. Smiling, he raced the thud of his boots up the nearest curving stairway, on upward until he reached the top floor. The highest level of the building was one large chamber with a slightly domed ceiling and scattered thin columns fluted in spirals. Glassless, arched windows all around flooded every corner with moonlight. The dust and grit and sand on the floor still faintly showed his own footprints from the one time he had come up here, and no other mark. It was perfect. Striding to the center of the room, he planted himself atop the mosaic there, the ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai, 10 feet across. It was an apt place. Under this sign will he conquer. That was what the prophecy of Rudion said of him. He stood straddling the sinuous dividing line, one boot on the black teardrop that was now called the Dragon's Fang and used to represent evil, the other on the white, now called the Flame of Tarvalin. Some men said it stood for the light, an appropriate place to meet this attack between light and darkness. The fetid feel grew stronger, and a burned sulfur smell filled the air. Suddenly things moved, slinking away from the stairs like moon shadows, along the outside of the room. Slowly they resolved into three black dogs, darker than night and big as ponies. Eyes shining silver, they circled him warily. With the power in him, he could hear their hearts beat, like deep drums pounding. He could not hear them breathe, though. Perhaps they did not. He channeled, and a sword was in his hands, its slightly curving heron-marked blade seeming hammered out of fire. He had expected Murdral, or something even worse than the Eyeless, but for dogs, even shadow-spawn dogs, the sword would be enough. Whoever had sent them did not know him. Lan said he had very nearly reached the level of a blade master now, and the warder was sparing enough with praise to make him think he might have passed on to that level already. With snarls like bones being ground to dust, the dogs hurtled at him from three sides, faster than galloping horses. He did not move until they were almost on him. Then he flowed, one with the sword, move to move, as though dancing. In the blink of an eye, the sword form called Whirlwind on the Mountain became the Wind Blows Over the Wall, became Unfolding the Fan. Great black heads flew apart from black bodies, their dripping teeth like burnished steel, still bared as they bounced across the floor. He was already stepping from the mosaic as the dark forms collapsed in twitching, bleeding heaps. Laughing to himself, he let the sword go, though he held on to Saidine, to the raging power, the sweetness, and the taint. Contempt slid along the outside of the void. Dogs. Shadowspawn, certainly, but still just... Laughter died. Slowly, the dead dogs and their heads were melting, settling into pools of liquid shadow that quivered slightly, as if alive. Their blood, fanned across the floor, trembled. Suddenly, the smaller pools flowed across the floor in viscous streams to merge with the larger, which oozed away from the mosaic to mound higher and higher, until the three huge black dogs stood there once more, slavering and snarling as they gathered massive haunches under them. He did not know why he felt surprise, dim outside the emptiness. Dogs, yes, but shadow spawn. Whoever had sent them had not been as careless as he had thought, but they still did not know him. Instead of reaching for the sword again, he channeled as he remembered doing once long ago. Howling, the huge dogs leaped, and a thick shaft of white light shot from his hands like molten steel, like liquid fire. He swept it across the springing creatures. For an instant, they became shadows of themselves, all colors reversed, and then they were made of sparkling motes that broke apart, smaller and smaller, until there was nothing. He let go of the thing he had made with a grim smile. A purple bar of light still seemed to cross his vision in afterimage. Across the great chamber, a piece of one of the columns crashed to the floor tiles. Where that bar of light, or whatever it had been, not light exactly, had swung, neat slices were gone from the columns. A gaping swath cut half the width of the wall behind them.
"Did any of them bite you or bleed on you?"
He spun at the sound of Moraine's voice. Absorbed in what he had done, he had not heard her come up the stairs. She stood clutching her skirts with both hands, peering at him, face lost in moonshadow. She would have sensed the things the same way he did, but to be here so quickly, she must have run. "The maidens let you pass? Have you become Fardarai's my Moraine?"
"They grant me some privileges of a wise one," she said in a rush, impatience raw in her usually melodious voice. "I told the guards I had to speak with you urgently. Now answer me. Did the Dark Hounds bite you or bleed on you? Did their saliva touch you?"
"No," he answered slowly. Dark Hounds. The little he knew he had gotten from old stories, the sort used to frighten children in the Southlands. Some grown-ups believed, too. "Why should a bite worry you? You could heal it. Does this mean the Dark One is free?" Enclosed in the void as he was, even fear was distant. The tales he had heard said the Dark Hounds ran the night in the wild hunt, with the Dark One himself the hunter. They left no print on even the softest dirt, only on stone, and they would not stop until you faced and defeated them, or put running water between you. Crossroads were supposed to be particularly dangerous places to meet them, and the time just after sunset or just before sunrise. He had seen enough old stories walking by now to believe that any of it could be true.
"No, not that, Rand."
She seemed to be regaining her self-control. Her voice was silver chimes again, calm and cool.
"They are only another kind of shadow spawn, something that should never have been made. But their bite is death as surely as a dagger in the heart, and I do not think I could have healed such a wound before it killed you. Their blood, even their saliva, is poison. A drop on the skin can kill, slowly, with great pain at the end. You are lucky there were only three, unless you killed more before I arrived. Their packs are usually larger, as many as 10 or 12, or so say the scraps left from the War of the Shadow."
Larger packs. He was not the only target in Roydian for one of the Forsaken.
"We must speak of what you used to kill them," Moraine began, but he was already running as hard as he could, ignoring her cries to know where he was going and why. Down flights of stairs, through darkened corridors, where sleepy maidens roused by the pounding boots peered at him in consternation from moonlit rooms. Through the front doors, where Lan stood restlessly, with the two women on guard, his color-shifting warder's cloak about his shoulders, making parts of him seem to blend into the night. "Where is Moraine?" he shouted, as Rand dashed by. But Rand leaped down the broad steps two at a time without replying. The half-healed wound in his side clenched like a fist, pain he was only vaguely aware of inside the void, by the time he reached the building he sought. It stood at the very edge of Rydion, far from the plaza, as far from the camp Moraine shared with the Wise Ones as it was possible to be and remain in the city. The upper floors had collapsed in a mound of rubble that fanned out onto the cracked earth beyond the pavement. Only the bottom two floors remained whole. Refusing his body's efforts to hunch over around the pane, he went in, still at a dead run. Once the great antechamber, encircled by a stone balcony, had been tall. Now it was taller, open to the night sky, its pale stone floor strewn with rubble from the collapse. In the moon shadows beneath the balcony, three darkhounds were up on their hind legs, clawing and chewing at a bronze-clad door that shivered under their assault. The smell of burned sulfur hung strong in the air. Remembering what had happened before, Rand darted to one side as he channeled, the shaft of liquid white light streaking by the door as it destroyed the shadow spawn. He had tried to make it less this time to confine the destruction to the darkhounds, but the thick wall at the far end of the chamber had a shadowed hole in it. Not all the way through, he thought. It was hard to tell by moonlight. But he would have to refine his control of this weapon. The bronze sheathing on the door was tattered and torn as though the teeth and toenails of the darkhounds really had been steel. Lamplight shone through a number of small holes. There were paw prints in the floor stones, but surprisingly few. Releasing Saidine, he found a place where he would not cut his hand to shreds and pounded on the door. Suddenly the pain in his side was very real and present. He took a deep breath and tried to thrust it away.
"Matt! It's me, Rand! Open up, Matt!"
After a moment, the door opened a crack, letting out a spill of lamplight. Matt peered through doubtfully, then pulled the door wider, leaning against it as if he had run 10 miles carrying a sack of rocks. Except for a silver foxhead medallion hanging around his neck, its eye shaped and shaded like the ancient Aes Sedai symbol, he was naked. The way Matt felt about Aes Sedai, Rand was surprised he had not sold the thing long since. Deeper in the room, a tall, golden-haired woman was calmly wrapping a blanket around herself. A maiden, by the spears and buckler lying at her feet. Rand hastily averted his eyes and cleared his throat.
"I just wanted to make sure you were all right."
"We're fine."
Uneasily, Matt looked around the antechamber.
"Now we are."
"You killed it or something?"
"I don't want to know what it was as long as it's gone. It's bloody hard on a man sometimes being your friend."
Not only a friend, another Taviran, and perhaps a key to victory in Tarmageddon. Anyone who wanted to strike at Rand had reason to strike at Matt as well. But Matt always tried to deny both things.
"They're gone, Matt. Darkhounds, three of them."
"I told you I didn't want to know,"
Matt groaned.
"Darkhounds now. I can't say it isn't always something new around you. A man wouldn't get bored, not until the day he died. If I hadn't been on my feet for a drink of wine when the door started to open..."
He trailed off, shivering, and scratched a red place on his right arm as he studied the ravaged metal sheathing.
"You know, it's funny how the mind plays tricks. When I was putting everything I had into holding this door shut, I could have sworn one of them had chewed a hole right through it. I could see its bloody head. And its teeth. Melindra's spear didn't even faze it."
Moraine's arrival was more spectacular this time, running in, skirts held up, panting and fuming. Lan was at her heels with his sword in hand and thunderclouds on his stone face, and right behind, a throng of Fardarai's Mai that spilled out into the street.
Some of the maidens wore no more than small clothes, but everyone held her spears alertly and had her shufa wrapped around her head, black veil hiding all but her eyes, ready to kill. Moiraine and Lan, at least, looked relieved to see him standing there calmly talking to Matt, though the Aes Sedai also looked as if she meant to have strong words with him. With the veils, it was impossible to tell what the Aiel thought. Letting out a loud whelp, Matt darted back into his room and began hastily tugging on a pair of breeches. His capering impeded by the way he kept trying to haul at the breeches and scratch his arm at the same time. The golden-haired maiden watched with a broad grin that threatened to break into laughter. "What's the matter with your arm?" Rand asked. "I told you the mind plays funny tricks," Matt said, still trying to scratch and pull at the same time. "When I thought that thing chewed through the door, I thought it slobbered all over my arm, too. And now it bloody itches like fire. Even looks like a burn there." Rand opened his mouth, but Moiraine was already pushing past him. Staring at her, Matt fell down while frantically dragging his breeches on the rest of the way, but she knelt beside him, ignoring his protests, clasping his head in her hands. Rand had been healed before and seen it done, but instead of what he expected, Matt only gave a shiver and lifted up the medallion by its leather thong so that it hung against his hand. "Bloody thing is colder than ice all of a sudden," he muttered. "What are you doing, Moiraine? If you want to do something, heal this itch. It has my whole arm now." His right arm was red from wrist to shoulder and had begun to look puffy. Moiraine stared at him with the most startled expression Rand had ever seen on her face. Maybe the only one.
"I will," she said slowly. "If the medallion is cold, take it off."
Matt frowned at her, then finally pulled it over his head and laid it beside him. She took his head again, and he gave a shout as if he had been ducked, head first, and ice. His legs stiffened, and his back arched. His eyes stared at nothing, as wide as they would go. When Moiraine took her hands away, he slumped, gulping air. The redness and swelling were gone. It took three tries before he could speak.
"Blood and ashes! Does it have to be that flaming way every flaming time? It was just a bloody itch."
"You watch your tongue with me," Moiraine told him, getting up, "or I will find Nynaeve and put her in charge of you."
But her heart was not in it. She could have been talking in her sleep. She was trying not to stare at the fox head as Matt hung it back around his neck.
"You will need rest," she said absently. "Stay in bed tomorrow if you feel like it."
The maiden in the blanket, Melindra, knelt behind Matt and put her hands on his shoulders, looking up at Moiraine over his head.
"I will see that he does as you say, Aes Sedai."
With a sudden grin, she ruffled his hair.
"He is my little mischief-maker now."
From the horrified look on Matt's face, he was gathering his strength to run. Rand became aware of soft, amused chuckles behind him. The maidens, shufas and veils around their shoulders now, had crowded around and were peering into the room.
"Teach him to sing, spear sister," Adeline said, and the other maidens crowed with laughter.
Rand rounded on them firmly.
"Let the man rest. Don't some of you have to put on clothes?"
They gave way reluctantly, still trying to peer into the room, until Moiraine came out.
"Will you leave us, please?"
the Aes Sedai said, as the mangled door banged shut behind her. She half looked back with a vexed tightening of her mouth.
"I must speak with Randall Thor alone."
Nodding, the Aiel women started for the door, some still jesting about whether Melindra, a Shido, it seemed, Rand wondered if Matt knew that, would teach Matt to sing. Whatever that meant. Rand stopped Adeline with a hand on her bare arm. Others who noticed stopped as well, so he spoke to them all.
"If you will not go when I tell you to, what will you do if I have to use you in battle?"
He did not intend to if he could help it. He knew they were fierce warriors, but he had been raised to believe it was a man's place to die if necessary before a woman had to. Logic might say it was foolish, especially with women like this, but that was how he felt. He knew better than to tell them that, however. Will you think it is a joke, or decide to go in your own good time? They looked at him, with the consternation of those listening to someone who had revealed his ignorance of the simplest facts.
In the Dance of Spears, Adeline told him, we will go as you direct. But this is not the dance. Besides, you did not tell us to go.
Even the Kaa Karn is not a wetlander king, a gray-haired maiden added.
Sinewy and hard, despite her age, she wore only a short shift and her shufa. He was tired of getting that phrase.
The maidens resumed their joking as they left him alone with Moraine and Lan.
The warder had finally put up his sword and looked as at ease as he ever did.
Which was to say, as still and calm as his face, all stony planes and angles in the moonlight, and with an air of being on the brink of sudden movement that made the Aiel appear placid in comparison. A braided leather cord held Lan's hair, graying at the temples, back from his face. His gaze could have come from a blue-eyed hawk.
I must speak with you about... Moraine began.
We can talk tomorrow, Rand said, cutting her off. Lan's face hardened further, if such was possible. Warders were far more protective of their Aes Sedai, of their position, as well as their persons, than they were of themselves. Rand ignored Lan. His side still wanted to hunch him over, but he managed to keep erect. He was not about to show her any weakness.
If you think I'll help you get that fox head away from Matt, you can think again.
Somehow that medallion had stopped her channeling, or at least it had stopped her channeling from affecting Matt while he touched it.
He paid a hard price for it, Maureen, and it is his.
Thinking of how she had thumped his shoulders with the power, he added dryly,
maybe I'll ask if I can borrow it from him.
He turned away from her. There was still one he had to check on, though one way or another the urgency was gone. The Darkhounds would have done what they intended by now.
Please, Rand,
Moraine said, and the open pleading in her voice halted him in his tracks. He had never heard anything like that from her before. The tone seemed to offend Lan.
I thought you had become a man, the warder said harshly. Is this how a man behaves? You act like an arrogant boy.
Lan practiced the sword with him, and liked him, Rand thought. But if Moraine said the right word, the warder would do his best to kill him.
I will not be with you forever, Moraine said urgently.
Her hands gripped her skirts so hard that they trembled.
I might die in the next attack. I could fall from my horse and break my neck, or take a dark friend's arrow through my heart. And death cannot be healed. I have given my entire life to the search for you, to find you and help you. You still do not know your own strength, and you cannot know half of what you do. I apologize most humbly for any offense I have given you.
Those words, words he had never thought to hear from her, came out as if dragged, but they came, and she could not lie.
Let me help you as much as I can while I can. Please.
It's hard to trust you, Moraine.
He disregarded Lan, shifting in the moonlight. His attention was all on her.
You have handled me like a puppet, made me dance the way you wanted from the day we met. The only times I've been free of you were either when you were far away or when I ignored you. And you make even that hard.
Her laugh was as silvery as the moon above, but bitterness tinged it.
It has been more like wrestling with a bear than pulling strings on a puppet. Do you want an oath not to try manipulating you? I give it.
Her voice hardened to crystal.
I swear to obey you, like one of the maidens, like one of the Gai Shine, if you require. But you must...
Taking a deep breath, she began again, more softly.
I ask you... humbly, to allow me to help you.
Lan was staring at her, and Rand thought his own eyes must be popping out of his head.
I will accept your help, he said slowly. And I apologize, too,
for all the rudeness I've shown."
He had the feeling he was still being manipulated. He had had good cause to be rude when he was, but she could not lie.
Tension drained from her visibly. She stepped closer to look up at him.
"What you use to kill the Dark Hounds is called bale fire. I can still sense the residue of it here."
He could too, like the fading smell remaining after a pie was carried out of the room, or the memory of something just snatched out of sight.
"Since before the breaking of the world, the use of bale fire has been forbidden. The White Tower forbids us even to learn it. In the War of Power, the Forsaken and the Shadowsworn themselves used it only reluctantly."
"Forbidden," Rand said, frowning. "I saw you use it once." He could not be sure in the pale light of the moon, but he thought color flamed in her cheeks. For this once, perhaps she was the one off balance.
"Sometimes it is necessary to do that which is forbidden."
If she was flustered, it did not show in her voice.
"When anything is destroyed with balefire, it ceases to exist before the moment of its destruction. Like a thread that burns away from where the flame touched it. The greater the power of the balefire, the further back in time it ceases to exist. The strongest I can manage will remove only a few seconds from the pattern. You are much stronger. Very much so."
"But if it doesn't exist before you destroy it..." Rand raked fingers through his hair in confusion.
"You begin to see the problems, the dangers. Matt remembers seeing one of the Dark Hounds chew through the door, but there is no opening now. If it had slavered on him as much as he remembers, he would have been dead before I could reach him. For as far back as you destroyed the creature, whatever it did during that time no longer happened. Only the memories remain for those who saw or experienced it. Only what it did before is real, now. A few tooth holes in the door and one drop of saliva on Matt's arm."
"That sounds just fine to me," he told her. "Matt's alive because of it."
"It is terrible, Rand."
An urgent note entered her voice.
"Why do you think even the Forsaken feared to use it? Think of the effect on the pattern of a single thread, one man, removed from hours or days that have already been woven, like one thread picked partly out of a piece of cloth. Fragments of manuscripts remaining from the War of Power say several entire cities were destroyed with balefire before both sides realized the dangers. Hundreds of thousands of threads pulled from the pattern, gone for days already past. Whatever those people had done now no longer had been done, and neither had what others had done because of their actions. The memories remained, but not the actions. The ripples were incalculable. The pattern itself nearly unraveled. It could have been the destruction of everything. World, time, creation itself."
Rand shivered, nothing to do with the cold cutting through his coat.
"I can't promise not to use it again, Moraine. You yourself said there are times when it's necessary to do what's forbidden."
"I did not think that you would," she said coolly. Her agitation was vanishing, her balance restored.
"But you must be careful."
She was back to must again.
"With a Sangreal, like Kalindor, you could annihilate a city with balefire. The pattern could be disrupted for years to come. Who can say that the weave would even remain centered on you, Tavirin as you are, until it settled down? Being Tavirin, and so strongly so, may be your margin of victory, even in the last battle."
"Perhaps it will," he said bleakly. In tale after heroic tale, the protagonist proclaimed he would have victory or death. It seemed that the best he could hope for was victory and death.
"I have to check on someone," he went on quietly. "I will see you in the morning."
Gathering the power into him, life and death in swirling layers, he made a hole in the air taller than he was, opening into blackness that made the moonlight seem day. "A gateway," Asmodian called it.
"What is that?" Moraine gasped. Once I've done something, I remember how. Most of the time.
That was no answer, but it was time to test Moraine's vows. She could not lie, but Aes Sedai could find loopholes in a stone.
You are to leave Matt alone tonight, and you won't try to take that medallion away from him.
It belongs in the tower for study, Rand. It must be a Tirangrial, but none has ever been found that...
Whatever it is, he said firmly, it is his. You will leave it with him. For a moment she seemed to struggle with herself, back stiffening and head coming up as she stared at him. She could not be used to taking orders from anyone except Swan Sanchez, and Rand was willing to wager she had never done that without a tussle. Finally, she nodded, and even made the suggestion of a curtsy.
As you say, Rand, it is his. Please be careful, Rand. Learning a thing like Balefire by yourself can be suicide, and death cannot be healed.
This time there was no mockery.
Until the morning.
Lan followed her as she left, the warder giving Rand an unreadable expression. He would not be pleased by this turn of events. Rand stepped through the gateway, and it vanished. He was standing on a disk, a 6-foot copy of the ancient Aes Sedai symbol. Even the black half of it seemed lighter against the endless darkness that surrounded him, above and below. He was sure that if he fell off, he would fall forever. Asmodian claimed there was a faster method called traveling for using a gateway, but he had not been able to teach it, partly because he did not have the strength to make a gateway while wearing Lanfear's shield. In any case, traveling required that you know your starting point very well. It seemed more logical to him that you should have to know where you were heading well, but Asmodian seemed to think that that was like asking why air was not water. There was a great deal that Asmodian took for granted. Anyway, skimming was fast enough. As soon as he planted his boots on it, the disk lurched what seemed to be a foot and stopped, another gateway appearing in front of it. Fast enough, especially over this short distance. Rand stepped into the hallway outside the room where Asmodian was. The moon through the windows at the ends of the corridor gave the only light. Asmodian's lamp was out. The flows he had woven around the room were still in place, still firmly tied. Nothing moved, but there was still a faint smell of burned sulfur. Moving close to the bead curtain, he peered through the doorway. Moon shadows filled the room, but one of them was Asmodian, tossing in his blankets. Wrapped in the void, Rand could hear his heartbeat, smell the sweat of troubled dreams. He bent to examine the pale blue floor tiles, and the prints impressed in them. He had learned to track as a boy, and reading them was no difficulty. 3 or 4 Darkhounds had been there. They had approached the doorway one by one, it seemed, each stepping almost in the other's footprints. Had the net woven around the room stopped them there? Or had they merely been sent to look and report? Troubling to think of even Shadowspawn dogs having that much intelligence. But then Murdral used ravens and rats for spies, too, and other animals closely linked to death. Shadow Eyes, the Aiel called them. Channeling fine flows of earth, he smoothed out the floor tiles, lifting up the compressions until he was out in the empty, night-cloaked street and 100 paces from the tall building. In the morning, anyone would be able to see the trail ending there, but none would suspect that the Darkhounds had gone anywhere near Asmodian. Darkhounds could have no interest in Jason Atael the Gleeman. Every maiden in the city was likely awake by this time. Certainly none would still be asleep under the roof of the maidens. Making another gateway, there in the street, a deeper blackness against the night, he let the disk carry him back to his own room. He wondered why he had chosen the ancient symbol. It was his choice, if unconscious. Other times it had been a stair step or a piece of floor. The Darkhounds had oozed away from that sign before reforming.
Under this sign will he conquer.
Standing in his pitch-black bedchamber, he channeled the lamp's light, but he did not let go of Sidene. Instead, he channeled again, careful not to spring any of his own traps, and a piece of wall vanished, revealing a niche he had carved there himself. In the little alcove stood two figurines, a foot tall. A man and a woman, each in flowing robes and serene of face, each holding a crystal globe aloft in one hand. He had lied to Osmodian about them. There were Angreal, like the round little man in Rand's coat pocket, and Sa-Angreal, like Kalandor, that increased the amount of the power that could be safely handled as much over Angreal as Angreal did over channeling unaided. Both were very rare and prized by Aes Sedai, though they could only recognize those attuned to women and Sayadar. These two figures were something else, not so rare, but just as highly valued. Tir-Angreal had been made to use the power, not magnify it, but to use it in specific ways. The Aes Sedai did not know the intended purpose even of most Tir-Angreal they had in the White Tower. Some they used, but without knowing whether the use they put them to was anything like the function they had been made for. Rand knew the function of these two. The male figure could link him to a huge replica of itself, the most powerful male Sa-Angreal ever made, even if he were on the other side of the Arath Ocean from it. It had only been finished after the Dark One's prison was resealed. How do I know that? And hidden before any of the male Aes Sedai going mad could find it. The female figure could do the same for a woman, joining her to the female equivalent of the great statue he hoped was still almost completely buried in Carrion. With that much power, Moraine had said death could not be healed. Unbidden, unwanted, memory returned of the next to last time he had dared let himself hold Kalandor, images floating beyond the void. The body of the dark-haired girl, little more than a child, lay sprawled with eyes wide and fixed on the ceiling, blood blackening the bosom of her dress where a trollic had run her through. The power was in him. Kalandor blazed, and he was the power. He channeled, directing flows into the child's body, searching, trying, fumbling. She lurched to her feet, arms and legs unnaturally rigid and jerky.
"Rand, you cannot do this," Moraine cried. "Not this!"
Breathe. She had to breathe. The girl's chest rose and fell. Heart had to beat. Blood already thick and dark oozed from the wound in her chest.
"Live, burn you!" his mind howled. "I didn't mean to be too late."
Her eyes stared at him, filmed, heedless of all the power in him. Lifeless. Tears trickled unheeded down his cheeks. He forced the memory away roughly. Even encased in the void, it hurt. With this much power, he could not be trusted. "You are not the creator," Moraine had told him as he stood over that child. But with that male figure, with only half of its power, he had made the mountains move once. With far less, with only Kalandor, he had been sure he could turn back the wheel, make a dead child live. Not only the one power was seductive, the power of it was, too. He should destroy them both. Instead, he rewove the flows, reset the traps.
"What are you doing there?"
a woman's voice said as the wall became apparently whole again. Tying off the flows hastily, and the knot with its own deadly surprises, he pulled the power into him and turned. Beside Lanfear, in her white and silver, Elaine or Min or Avienda would look almost ordinary. Her dark eyes alone were enough to make a man give up his soul. At the sight of her, his stomach clenched until he wanted to vomit.
"What do you want?" he demanded.
Once he had blocked Egwene and Elaine both from the true source. But he could not remember how. So long as Lanfear could touch the source, he had more chance of catching the wind in his hands than of holding her prisoner. One flash of balefire and... he could not do it. She was one of the Forsaken, but the memory of a woman's head rolling on the ground stopped him dead.
"You have two of them," she said finally. "I thought I glimpsed... one is a woman, isn't it?"
Her smile could have halted a man's heart and made him grateful.
"You are beginning to consider my plan, aren't you?" With those, together, the other chosen will kneel at our feet. We can supplant the great lord himself, challenge the creator.
You are always ambitious, Mirren. His voice grated in his ears. Why do you think I turned away from you? It wasn't Ileana, whatever you like to think. You were out of my heart long before I ever met her. Ambition is all there is to you. Power is all you ever wanted. You disgust me.
She stared at him, both hands pressed hard against her stomach, her dark eyes even larger than usual.
Grendel said,
she began faintly. Swallowing, she began again.
Luce Theron. I love you, Luce Theron. I've always loved you, and I always will. You know that. You must.
Rand's face was like rock. He hoped it hid his shock. He had no idea where his words had come from, but it seemed he could remember her. A dim memory from before.
I am not Luce Theron Telamon.
I am Randall Thor, he said harshly.
Of course you are.
Studying him, she nodded slowly to herself. That cool composure returned.
Of course. Asmodian has been telling you things about the War of Power and me. He lies. You did love me. Until that yellow-haired trollop Ileana stole you.
For an instant, rage made her face a contorted mask. He did not think she was even aware of it.
Did you know that Asmodian severed his own mother? What they call stilling now. Severed her and let Murdral drag her away screaming. Can you trust a man like that?
Rand laughed aloud.
After I caught him, you helped trap him, so he had to teach me. And now you say I cannot trust him?
For teaching?
She sniffed dismissively.
He will do that because he knows his lot is cast with you for good. Even if he managed to convince the others that he has been a prisoner, they would still tear him apart, and he knows it. The weakest dog in the pack often suffers that fate. Besides, I watch his dreams on occasion. He dreams of you triumphing over the great lord and putting him up beside you on high. Sometimes he dreams of me.
Her smile said those dreams were pleasant for her, but not so for Asmodian.
But he will try to turn you against me.
Why are you here?
He demanded. Turn against her? No doubt she was full of the power right that moment, ready to shield him if she even suspected he meant to try anything. She had done it before, with humiliating ease.
I like you like this, arrogant and proud, full of your own strength.
Once she had said that she liked him unsure, that Luce Theron had been too arrogant.
Why are you here?
Ravin sent the Dark Hounds after you tonight, she said calmly, folding her hands at her waist. I would have come sooner to help you, but I cannot let the others know I am on your side yet.
On his side. One of the Forsaken loved him, or rather, the man he had been 3,000 years ago, and all she wanted was for him to give his soul to the Shadow and rule the world with her. Or a step below her, at least.
That and try to replace both the Dark One and the Creator. Was she completely mad? Or could the power of those two huge Sa'angreal really be as great as she claimed?
That was a direction he did not want his thoughts to take.
Why would Ravin choose now to attack me? Asmodian says he looks to his own interests, that he'll sit to one side even in the last battle, if he can, and wait for the Dark One to destroy me. Why not Samael or Demandred? Asmodian says they hate me.
Not me. They hate Luce Theron.
But to the Forsaken, that was the same thing.
Please, light, I am Randall Thor.
He pushed away a sudden memory of this woman in his arms, both of them young and just learning what they could do with the power.
I am Randall Thor.
Why not Semirag, or Mogadian, or Grin...
But you are
impinging on his interests now.
She laughed.
Don't you know where he is? In Andor. In Camelin itself. He rules there in all but name. Morgaze simpers and dances for him. Her and half a dozen others.
Her lip curled in disgust.
He has men scouring town and countryside to find new pretties for him.
For a moment, shock held him. Elaine's mother in the hands of one of the Forsaken.
Yet he dared not show concern.
Lanfear had displayed her jealousy more than once. She was capable of hunting Elaine down and killing her, if she even thought he had feelings for her.
What do I feel for her?
Aside from that, one hard fact floated beyond the void, cold and cruel in its truth. He would not run off to attack Ravin, even if what Lanfear said was true.
Forgive me, Elaine, but I can't.
She might well be lying. She would weep no tears for any of the other Forsaken he killed. They all stood in the way of her own plans. But in any event, he was done with reacting to what others did. If he reacted, they could reason out what he would do. Let them react to him, and be as surprised as Lanfear and Osmodian had been.
Does Ravin think I'll rush to defend Morgaze? He said.
I have seen her once in my life. The Two Rivers is part of Andor on a map, but I never saw a Queen's Guardsman there. No one has in generations.
Tell a Two Rivers man Morgaze is his queen, and he'll probably think you're crazy.
I doubt Ravin expects you to run to defend your homeland, Lanfear said wryly. But he will expect you to defend your ambitions. He means to sit Morgaze on the Sun Throne, too, and use her like a puppet until the time he can come into the open. More Andoran soldiers move into Carrion every day.
And you sent Tyran soldiers north to secure your own hold on the land. No wonder that he attacked you as soon as he found you.
Rand shook his head. It had not been that way at all, sending the Tyrans, but he did not expect her to understand. Or believe him, if he told her, for that matter.
I thank you for the warning. Politeness to one of the Forsaken. Of course, there was nothing he could do except hope that some of what she told him was truth.
A good reason not to kill her. She'll tell you more than she thinks if you listen carefully.
He hoped that was his own thought, chill and cynical as it was.
You ward your dreams against me.
Against everyone. That was simple truth, though she was at least as prominent in the list as the wise ones.
Dreams are mine. You and your dreams are mine especially.
Her face remained smooth, but her voice hardened.
I can break through your warding. You would not like it.
To show his unconcern, he sat down at the foot of his pallet, legs folded and hands on his knees. He thought his face was as calm as hers. Inside him, the power swelled. He had flows of air ready to bind her and flows of spirit. That was what wove a shield against the true source. The racking of his brain for the how of it seemed far off, but he could not remember anyway. Without that, the other was useless. She could pick apart or slice through anything he wove, even if she could not see it. Osmodian was trying to teach him that trick, but it was hard going without a woman's weaving to practice on. Lanfear eyed him in a disconcerted fashion, a slight frown marring her beauty.
I have examined the Aiel women's dreams, these so-called wise ones. They do not know how to shield themselves very well. I could frighten them till they never dream again, never even think of invading yours, surely.
I thought you would not help me openly. He did not dare tell her to leave the wise ones alone. She might well do something despite him. She had made it plain from the start, if not in words, that she meant to have the upper hand between them. Wouldn't that risk another of the Forsaken finding out? You aren't the only one who knows how to enter people's dreams.
The Chosen, she said absently.
For a moment, she chewed a full underlip.
I've watched the girl's dreams, too. Egwene. Once I thought you had feelings for her. Do you know who she dreams of? Morgaze's son and stepson. The son Gawain, most often.
Smiling, she put on a tone of mock shock.
You would not believe a simple country girl could have such dreams.
She was trying to test his jealousy, he realized. She really thought he warded his dreams to hide thoughts of another woman. The maidens guard me closely, he said dryly. If you want to know how close, look at Isendra's dreams. Spots of color flared in her cheeks. Of course. He was not supposed to see what she was trying. Confusion rolled outside the void. What did she think?
Isendra?
Lanfear knew she was a dark friend. Lanfear had brought Kadir and the woman to the waste in the first place. And planted most of the jewelry Isendra was accused of stealing. Lanfear's spite was cruel, even when petty. Still, if she thought he could love her, Isendra being a dark friend was probably no obstacle in her eyes. I should have let them send her off to try reaching the Dragon Wall, he went on casually. But who knows what she might have said to save herself. I must protect her and Kadir to some extent in order to protect Asmodian. The color faded, but as she opened her mouth again, a knock came at the door. Rand bounded to his feet. No one would recognize Lanfear, yet if a woman were discovered in his room, a woman whom none of the maidens below had seen enter, questions would be asked, and he had no answers. But Lanfear already had a gateway open, to somewhere full of white silk hangings and silver.
Remember that I am your only hope of surviving, my love.
It was a very cool voice in which to call someone that.
Beside me, you need fear nothing. Beside me, you can rule everything that is or will be.
Lifting her snowy skirts, she stepped through and the gateway winked shut. The knock sounded again before he could make himself push away Sidene and haul open the door. Inala peered past him, suspiciously muttering.
I thought perhaps Isendra...
She gave him an accusing look.
Spear sisters are searching everywhere for you. No one saw you return.
With a shake of her head, she straightened. She always tried to stand as tall as possible.
The chiefs have come to speak with the Ka Karn, she said formally. They wait below.
They waited on the columned portico, as it turned out, being men. The sky was still dark, but the first glimmers of dawn lined the mountains to the east. If they felt any impatience with the two maidens who stood between them and the tall doors, it did not show on their shadowed faces.
A shadow are moving, Han barked as soon as Rand appeared. And the rain, the Miagoma, the Shianda, every clan.
Joining Culloden or me? Rand demanded.
The Shido are moving toward the Jengai Pass, Ruark said. For the others, it is too early to tell. But they are on the march with every spear not needed to defend the holds, herds, and flocks.
Rand only nodded. All of his determination not to let anyone else dictate what he would do, and now this. Whatever the other clans intended, Culloden had to plan a crossing into Kyrian. So much for his grand schemes of imposing peace, if the Shido ravaged Kyrian even further while he sat in Ruidion, waiting for the other clans.
Then we move for the Jengai too, he said finally.
We cannot catch him if he means to cross,
Aram cautioned, and Han added sourly.
If any of the others are joining him, we will be caught strung out like blind worms in the sun.
I won't sit here until I find out, Rand said. If I can't catch Culloden, I mean to be right behind him into Kyrian.
Rouse the spears. We leave as soon after first light as you can manage.
Giving him that odd Aiel bow used only on the most formal occasions, one foot forward and one hand extended, the chiefs departed. Only Han said anything.
To Sheol Ghul itself,